It comes for Subban. Faking. Trying to get one. Three scores! At 3:52, the Predators make it 2-0. Subban flipping it in from the blue line.
I didn't realize we had a Gord Miller call of that goal, or we should have a Gord Miller call of that goal. That was Pete Weber, who's been around for a long time, and that was before that the Prime Minister of the country. Quick now, who was Clinton's running mate? What's his name?
That would be Senator.
You got to think.
Senator Tim Kaine.
Never did get the last name right. Along with Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock, Connor McKenna and the Playground Poker Gang at 7. At 8 o'clock, is Simon in?
He is.
Prime timing with Simon Salikas. Right now, though.
Gord Miller on Melnick in the Afternoon. Brought to you by Wrangler's Premium Performance Cool Vantage Jeans. Don't sweat the job. Do like Gary Price. Choose Wrangler's Cool Vantage Jeans to be cool and stay cool.
How you doing, Gord?
I'm doing very well, and you?
I'm fine, thank you. I didn't realize you were in Nashville last night.
I was, yeah.
And I know you're a total pro, but I'm just curious because, you know, I was in the press box at the Bell Center last night, and some of my friends in the media were freaking out big time. So I'm curious what it was like there.
It was interesting just because in Nashville, you actually sit in the crowd. The booth is right in the back row of the crowd. So there was all these glowing screens in front of me as people were checking Twitter and checking election results and, texting each other and things like that. And the most interesting thing was the night before, I was having dinner at the hotel bar, and there were four guys sitting next to me, two from Pennsylvania, one from Texas, one from Florida. There was a big convention at the hotel, and they were all saying how they thought Trump could win. And I thought, wow, I didn't say anything. I thought, gee, those guys are obviously overserved, but there you go. And as the night went along, and Tennessee is Trump country. There was more and more cheers going up through the crowd as more and more states were named.
Yeah. So I'm curious, have you ever been in a situation where you're a little or somewhat or tempted to be a little distracted?
I was a little distracted last night, for sure. I tried to keep it to commercial breaks to check, but I was checking my phone to see what was going on, for sure, yeah. I mean, sometimes I'll have another game on while I'm calling a game.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll have a game on while I'm calling a game sometimes, during the playoffs and stuff, but I can focus.
Yeah. Multitasker.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the way that they want me to play and the way I play the game of jumping into the play and creating and driving offense and turning defense into offense, that a lot of that takes chemistry. Like, I played with a guy for 6 years, an Andre Markov, and we had great chemistry together.
PK Subban, a couple of hours ago on the show, we're gonna run the conversation before 7, before we hand things off to Connor at Playground Poker. And since you saw him last night, I know we haven't discussed this, and I think a lot of Canadians fans probably checked out the first couple of Nashville games and now have moved on, but do you see some obvious progress there?
Yeah, interesting progress. He's playing with Matthias Ekholm now, and the idea was he'd play with Roman Josi, but that didn't work initially. So they've broken up Subban and Josi, but at the same time, they've broken up Ekholm and Ellis, which was a really good pair for them last year. So I don't know if they'll go back to Subban and Josi, but they're just trying to cobble together the best they can right now. Subban had one even strength point going into last night's game. So had two last evening. He played a very good game last night. I've watched a lot of Nashville games. I've called three of them. And that was his best game that I've seen last night.
And Nashville is, you keep waiting for that stretch where they're going to win 5 out of 6 or 6 out of 8 or something.
Well, I think I mentioned to you, though, they did play, their 8 games in October were all against teams that made the playoffs last year. So
right.
They had a tough schedule to start, a lot of road games. They can still get back in it. Their issue, as much as anything, is their forwards aren't scoring. Ryan Johansson had one even strength point going to last night. Philip Forsberg's not scoring. So their big guys aren't putting the puck in the net, and that's a problem. James Neal's heated up of late, but they need their big guys to get going.
It's amazing how many players, veteran players, are beyond sluggish to start the first month or so.
Well, I think we always, overstate the first 10, 12 games of the year. Every player is going to go through a stretch where they score once in 12 games. It gets magnified when it happens from the start of the season. It's like a team that gets off to a good or a bad start. It gets magnified because it's the start of the year. If a team like Nashville won 3 out of 11 games in midseason, it wouldn't be noticed as much. When you come out of the gate like that, it gets noticed a lot. And you know, some teams don't come out of it, but Anaheim did. Anaheim was in last place at Christmas last year in the Pacific and wound up winning the division. So I think they have a good team. I don't know if it's as good as last year, and I don't know if they can recreate the kind of career years that so many guys had, where, you know, Philip Forsberg had a great year, you know, Colin Wilson had a great year, Craig Smith had a great year. I don't know if they can recreate all that. And listen, I mean, the guys in the room talk about it. They traded Shea Weber, and that changes the way they play.
We know something about good starts in this city, Gord. The team's off to another one. But I'm curious, like, the narrative is that regular season games near the end of the year are more meaningful, even though that's not accurate.
Right.
The players you talk to, do you get a sense that they deem certain periods of the season to be more important than others?
No. No, I think that, you know, and people say to me all the time, you know, how do you stand going to those meaningless early season hockey games? For people that play in them, every game's important. I mean, for you guys, every show you do is important. I think that, you know, when you're a professional, you approach every day the same way, whether, you know, it's October or April. I've always said this, that there's no such thing as big game players. There are players who treat every game like it's a big game. And so when they're in that situation where it's all on the line, it's not unusual for them. So when you prepare for games that way, you don't have to adjust when it is game seven or it is overtime. And I think that's an important way to approach it.
That's so. What you seem to be saying is there's no real inherent clutch value of a player.
No, I think that there are players who have delivered in big moments a lot. But if you look at a guy like Sidney Crosby, who scored in a lot of big moments, he approaches every game with focus and intensity. So, I mean,
right, as it should be. But there are players. there are probably players more talented than, in terms of raw talent, than Sidney Crosby that we all know about, who just couldn't focus.
Right, and so he puts that on himself every game and demands the best of himself every game. I remember in 1980, I want to say it was 85, I was flying with the Oilers and they went on a 5-game road trip, flying commercial back then. And I sat next to Gretzky on a flight back from Hartford to Toronto to Edmonton. And we're sitting on the Toronto-Edmonton leg, and he had double-shifted against Hartford. They'd blown them out. The division was over. He'd won the scoring title. I said, why don't you take a night off once in a while? Like, and he said that his dad had taught him, every time you play, someone sees you for the first time and someone sees you for the last time, and it's important they both have a good impression. Now, apparently Joe DiMaggio said that. But,
yeah, I was going to you got me there. Just as I was about to jump in with that, yeah.
Yeah, so Gretzky's desire to be the best every night fueled him. And that's why in big moments he could come up big, because every moment was a big moment for him.
There's somebody listening to you right now for the very first time.
There is. I hope they're impressed.
Moved it up along the wing for Ehlers. With some speed now at center, across the line for Scheifele. Cut in toward the net, now in front. A shot, they score! Guess who? Patrick Laine! A hat trick here tonight!
So we'll go back again to a conversation we had with Gord about a storyline that he wants to follow this season, and I don't think a week has gone by where some of the young talent in the NHL has not put on a show.
It's been amazing. Laine's incredible, because if you put a large circle around him, say like 6 inches in diameter, or sorry, 6 feet in diameter, any puck in that circle, he can get on net. Like in front of him, behind him, wherever it is, he can get the puck on net. I've not seen this since Brett Hull.
Hmm.
A guy who can just deliver pucks like this, hard and accurate, no matter where it is, and quickly. It's amazing.
Better than Ovechkin.
Yeah, I think Ovechkin, more dynamic skater. I mean, Ovechkin is a more, you know, can beat you off the rush. There's lots of different ways Ovechkin can score, and he's certainly got the great one-timer, but not like the, I mean, Laine, just, it's amazing when, like, no matter where the puck is, he delivers it on goal.
Seems, Gord, like he has a pretty good personality, too. Like, this is not one of those quiet, soft-spoken guys. Like, he looks like he could be a pretty marketable player.
Yeah, and, you know, I read an article in the Globe on the weekend that I found odd, you know, ripping on Connor McDavid for not, you know, for being robotic and not being more outgoing. And I thought, here you have, you know, Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine and all these young players who are humble unselfish and respectful, and that's a bad thing?
Yeah.
Like, if your son grew up to be like them in terms of personality, you'd be delighted. Or your child, I should say your child. I mean, you'd be delighted. And Liney's got a great personality. So does McDavid, but they're under so much scrutiny. I mean, it's not their job to fill reporters' notebooks or be controversial or attract attention to themselves.
You got that, Gallo? Gallo complained after his first session with Shea Weber.
I wouldn't say it was a complaint. All I said was I don't need to talk to Shea Weber.
When I'm
in the dressing room, I know what he's going to say. I don't need to talk to him. I'm not mad at him, and I don't disrespect him. I just know what he's going to tell me.
Why is it Shea Weber's job to be entertaining to you?
It's not his job.
No, but there are many, 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 many members of the media through the years who will judge somebody based on what they give to them.
So I can imagine what that writer from the Globe and Mail would have thought of Roger Maris.
Well, see, now you have to educate the kids on Roger Maris.
So when Maris and Mantle were both going for Babe Ruth's record in 1961, the media was completely on Mickey Mantle's side. They loved him. They drank with him. He was colorful. He was entertaining. Maris was quieter, more introspective, didn't seek the spotlight. He was just an introvert. And they just pounded on him.
Yeah, they hounded him.
Why so glum, Roger? Why are you so unhappy? Why can't you be more like Mickey? And I've never understood that. I mean, hockey players as a group are such a good group of people who do so much for charity, are unselfish, generous with fans. I mean, when you think about all the stories here about pro athletes and how few of them are about hockey players, it's amazing. And why can't we celebrate that?
Lewis out at center, the pass on the right wing side. He'll take it down into the corner. Lewis is around back of the net, and it goes off of Jake Gardner's skate into the goal. Why not? If it's going bad, it might as well all go bad at once. And Lewis is going to get credit for this. And it is 7-0.
All right, bit of a wake-up call for the giddy Leafs fans. And the LA Kings are here tomorrow, and since we won't speak to you tomorrow, they're a really interesting case study. The Kings are the Kings, right? I don't want to compare them to Shea Weber now there, Gallo, but you know exactly what you're going to get, but do they have enough, or do they have to change at some point, much like the Predators were forced to, although without winning a cup like the Kings did? All right, do you think as an organization they're going to have to change their focus a little bit to get back to the promised land?
Well, I think they have in a way. They've tried to inject some more speed into their lineup and some youth. The building blocks are pretty good there. I mean, you know, even without Jonathan Quick, and Quick is a tremendous goaltender, a battler, a fighter, a goaltender that players love playing with. You've got Drew Doughty, who is probably the best defenseman in the game right now. And the guys behind him on that defense are pretty good, too. And then you've got down the middle, starting with Anze Kopitar, a real good team. So I don't know if they have to tweak much. You know, the question with the Kings is they're built to beat you in a 7-game series.
Right.
But, man, when they're going, like, they're almost like a python. They just don't give you any breath. They just squeeze you and squeeze you and squeeze you. They're so good defensively because they have the puck all the time.
This could be a scary matchup for the Canadians, who have been outshot. They've given up over 40 shots again for the last four games straight.
Right. So the Kings just keep the puck. You know, they get it deep. They work it on you. They wear your defense down. They're big and hard to manage. But then they've got guys like, you know, Jeff Carter, when he's healthy, Marian Gaborik, who can score quick strike goals for them. Tyler Toffoli is a terrific in-tight goal scorer. It's interesting, you know, you heard that Trevor Lewis scoring last night. Lewis was unpicked in the draft, and they grabbed him. Tyler Toffoli went unpicked in the draft. They grabbed him. Tanner Pearson went unpicked in two drafts, and they grabbed him. They do a terrific job of drafting and developing players, and they've got real good players in Ontario, in the American Hockey League, Ontario, California, including Adrian Kempe, a terrific Swedish player who's lighting up the American League, and will be in their lineup, maybe not this year, but very soon.
There's a possibility that Desharnais will be a healthy scratch for the matchup tomorrow, Gord. Is that something that teams do when facing the LA Kings? Do they often tweak their lineup and go grittier and go bigger?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that because it, you know, should you do that or just be who you are? I mean, because the Kings can be beaten. I mean, they're not They're not invincible. But I don't know what's going on with Darren Eakins. Wasn't he on the first line last week?
Yeah, kind of. Well, kind of. Yeah, briefly. Yeah. Yeah, the first line is any line center.
The first, the top center, right?
That's right. He's the top center, yeah.
But Darnay was getting, you know, first line-ish minutes.
Yes.
So did he do something wrong?
He hasn't scored. He hasn't generated. He hasn't. Right. He's not shooting. He's just kind of stuck in no man's land right now.
Right. So. I mean, listen. I mean, and you asked the question earlier, Rod, about, you know, games early in the season, late in the season. Look, I mean, you know, if you miss the playoffs by 2 points, or miss winning the division by 2 points, or miss home ice advantage by 2 points, you think back to all the games you could have won. And you can't be messing around too long waiting for people to come around. So I guess they think that's the best move.
Let me finish with this. This is how we actually started our show today. I think you'd appreciate this.
You better take him seriously, because it's very likely he could win the Republican nomination, and it could be Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. I'm not saying he's got anywhere near a lock on it, but he is proving to be the real product, a candidate to take serious.
That was in the summer of 2015. Douglas Brinkley, noted writer, one of the great nonfiction writers in America, and a professor at New Orleans, and he could see this coming.
Yep.
That's something.
It's an amazing story. It's an amazing story about the disconnect between, I would say, the establishment, like the party establishments, a lot of people in the media, and everyday people, and what they're thinking. And woe be to those who lose connection with what everyday people are thinking. And there's a lot that went into this. Who knows where it's going to lead. But clearly some powerful forces have been unleashed here.
Have a great week, Gord.
Yeah, you too, guys.
Always a treat. This was Kinky Friedman also. On Melnick in the Afternoon, noted singer-songwriter who once ran to become the governor of Texas.
As I said, I wasn't a fan of Trump's, but sometimes from the oddest places, you know, in the oddest ways, something great will come. And it might be interesting to see what kind of president that guy could be. That guy could be a Andrew Jackson or a Teddy Roosevelt, and it's possible.
And Bill Lee. They're two hugely unpopular figures.
Yes.
for voters to consider, if that's what it is.
Yes, and if you're going to pick the lesser of two evils, you're still going to get evil.
What'd you expect, Irving Berlin or Kate Smith?